All right, here we go. Chris Collinsworth, Richard Sherman, our very first podcast. It's actually our second podcast, but it's good to have two first podcasts because we did one, right?
Right.
On social justice. It was a little too hot. let the temperatures drop down just a little bit. We'll play that one eventually. We'll have some fun with that. But we're going to talk football today. We're just going to do kind of a pure broadcast, and I'm going to tell the story one more time. I told it the last time, but when they came to me and asked me to do a podcast, and I was like, I don't really have time, they said, oh, we can get you great guests, we can get you, this guy, we get you Richard Sherman, I was like, whoa. I said, I tell you what, I'm so intrigued with Richard Sherman, his background, his family story, Compton, all the stuff he's been in the league over the years, all the stuff he's in right now. You just get Richard Sherman every week and I'll do a podcast. So a lot of hard negotiations later, here we are, off we go. It's going to be fantastic. Thanks for being there.
Man, I'm so excited, man. This is going to be immense pleasure, and I think we're going to inform a lot of people. It's going to be some great football knowledge shared here.
We are going to have some fun. All right, we're going to start off with just a couple of things. I know you just got back from the Greenbrier. I've been to the Greenbrier one time, and you stayed there for a whole week. It is like going back in time, isn't it? You want to try and describe it better?
It's beyond going back in time, and in every sense of the word. It's very plantation-esque. You got green carpet, you got red furniture, you got wallpaper that looks like you're from the 1950s. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a beautiful place, in its own right. But my goodness, do they need an upgrade?
Get out, man. Come on, get out.
Come on. Every bit of get out. It has those vibes every single day. And you're like, hey, everybody just, walk around with a buddy.
Yeah, we all had the buddy system going there. All right, I got one more for you. So you've played in multiple Super Bowls. I've played in a couple of Super Bowls. I've broadcast a few Super Bowls now, talking to 120 million people, and you kind of go, oh, man, I hope I don't screw this up kind of thing, right?
Right.
But can you imagine walking out on a stage with another person, knowing that either you or that guy or lady is going to be the next president of the United States, and it probably greatly depends on what I say over the next hour and a half or however long those things last. Can you imagine that? We're competitive guys. We wouldn't be where we are, right? That to me is greater than a heavyweight championship fight, MMA. I love presidential debates. I think they are the coolest thing in the world.
I'd agree. I mean, it's one-on-one, it's intense, it's scrutinized, it's criticized. You go out there and you just have to put your best foot forward. I don't think they give them the list of questions. I'm sure they give them, some idea of what they're going to be
like
asked.
It's like Jeopardy. They have categories. You give categories.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you're in the ballpark, but you're not getting the exact question. So, I mean, but anything you say, regardless of it's right, wrong, indifferent, like whatever you say is going to be broadcast and scrutinized day in and day out for the next two to three months. So, man, that's not something I want to be a part of.
It's like sort of like the committees you're on right now with the I know you've just come out of some stuff. And we are broadcasting this on Tuesday of the presidential debate that will be tonight. But we had a bit of an issue in the NFL. We have positive COVID tests, right? And we have the Tennessee Titans, who had three players test positive. They had five other employees, personnel, test positive as well. As of yet, as far as I know, the Vikings, who they played, have not tested positive. But here we go. This is the first time where there is some question as to whether or not we're going to allow the Tennessee Titans to play the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think, this weekend. And does it put them at greater risk? Are they going to move it to Monday night? You were just a part of all those discussions, and I know you have, top secret clearance here, but what can you tell us?
Well, if there was a point in time where there were discussions about, kind of going every other day testing because it's been so successful with everyday testing. And, you know, we hadn't had an outbreak of any kind, you know, and that's obviously been voted on, and we wanted to continue the everyday testing. And that was before the outbreak in Tennessee and what's going on with the Vikings, because they played the Titans. But this, there was an expectation that something like this could occur. And these are protocols that we put in place. Like, you kind of shut it down, you let everybody, and you hope that, you know, we can find a way to get them back in the building before Saturday. With the testing schedule, we have the PCR testing, you know, the quicker response testing going on for both teams. Obviously, there's a chance the Minnesota Vikings get into the building before the Tennessee Titans, because they haven't had the positive test. They just have the contact with the Tennessee Titans. So that was just a protection, you know, hey, both of you guys shut it down, and we'll take tests from both sides. And since Tennessee hasn't had any positive tests, there's a chance that they get in the building sooner. But it's just unfortunate, because there'll still be an expectation that the Tennessee Titans are going to be expected to be prepared to play. Because as you know, in football, there's not like baseball where you could just delay and find another week, you know, later down the line where you could say, hey, let's reschedule this game and get it going. There isn't any time, you know. So that's where things are getting kind of muddy. And, you know, obviously this is a point in time we've never been in. So it'll be very interesting going forward. You know, that decision will be made by the league ultimately, with some input from the PA, but, you know, it's the league's call.
Hey, and Mike Vrabel apparently is on record already, which one of the great quotes I ever heard. I love this. It's like, hey, if we aren't allowed to practice all week and we have to go play on Sunday or Monday, so be it. We'll be ready to play. No excuses. I'm like, all right, then. Now that's football right there. I was like, that is pretty awesome right there for the head coach. I can just imagine how many coaches would have been like, this is unfair. This is no way. There's no way you can do it. It was like he owned responsibility for his team. He owned responsibility for the positive test, which I think to some extent you have to factor in. Like, you have to put some of the responsibility on these teams to stay as clean as they can. If you go out in a bar, a fan out there should say, Richard Sherman, go home, because you might infect everybody on your football team, right? And there's some responsibility to that, but it's pretty hardcore. And we haven't seen that tact yet in any other sport, but it looks like that's the way football is going.
Right, and that's exactly how they're going. It's more suggestive in football, you know, and NHL, there's a bubble. And basketball, there's been a bubble. I think they're working it out in baseball where the playoffs are going to be bubbled to some capacity.
Correct. After the first round, I think.
After the first round. And so, but in football, it's more suggestive. It's like, hey, we wouldn't like you to do this. There will be discipline if you're caught doing such and such. But I think when you have that amount of players and personnel being infected, I think you have to go deeper. Like, was it the plane? Was it the hotel? Because, you know, maybe they were all out at a bar together and just hanging out, you know, which I just highly doubt in this climate that many people, including the personnel department and the executive, would be together in one spot. So that's what's making this kind of troubling, is like, where did the outbreak come from? Because it could have easily come from one of the places where there isn't as much control. We can't buy out every hotel. So you're in hotel, you're passing and dealing with people who aren't being tested, the people that clean your rooms, the people that serve your food, et cetera, et cetera. So no matter how much you mask up, we don't know enough about this virus to really understand where it could have come from.
It's amazing going around city to city now. We've been in several cities. We've been in Kansas City. We've been in LA. We've been in Seattle. We've been in New Orleans. And I've been to all those cities so many times now that you look forward to them, right? You got your spots in everyone. You're going to go dinner. You have a good time, right? You love people there. You got friends and family, all that stuff. All those places were different, right? I mean, they're different. New Orleans was way different than anything that I've ever seen out of there. This is until you go outside your own neighborhood, you really don't feel the full impact of what's going on in this country right now.
Right. It's different in every state. In California, I mean, women can't go to nail salons. You can't go to a barber. You can't go any of those things. They're closed. They're not open for business. You cannot go. There are no dine-in. There is, like, California is probably as strict as it is in the whole country. But then you go to Texas or Florida, and it's all different. You can go to a restaurant, you can get a good meal, you can go hang out, you can get your nails done, you can go to the barber or get your, you know, it's just, and that's what makes it difficult for to police, you know. And plus, football is such a huge number of people. Like, to bubble baseball, there are what, 14, 15 players on the roster, you know, at most, a few personnel, you know, maybe 40, 50 people. Same with basketball. Hockey may be a little different, but closer. Football, there's 69 players. So then you add the coaches, that's over 100 people. Then you talk about the video staff and the chefs and all the necessary components that you have. That's 200 people per team that you have to try to bubble. Like, it would have been impossible. So, it's hard. You know, I think we're doing the best we can with under circumstances, but you kind of got to expect for a little bit of, you know, what's going on.
You know what's amazing is that the Las Vegas Raiders have not had any buzz. I'm just sorry. I always think if when I was 22 years old, if I had been playing in Las Vegas for any amount of time, probably would have been broke. There's no telling how my life would have turned out. Think about how difficult it must be to try and control those young men in Las Vegas where everything is there, right? Everything.
I can't imagine. I just couldn't imagine being 22, 21, money in my pocket, you know, single, and even during a season. I mean, it's so much temptation, so much to do, so many bright lights. Hey, I want to go have a drink here, gamble here. And these are grown men, you know what I mean? I mean, it's nothing illegal about any of those things. It's just frowned upon. Like, they don't want you in a casino. They don't want you at places that you, but they're young. Young people make mistakes. And so, you know, to their credit, I mean, they've been a clean team. So you got to give a lot of credit to Gruden and whatever they're telling those guys.
You can't imagine, and I can't remember. So we make a great team here. That'll be great. All right, man, let's do a little football here. You unfortunately had the Patrick Mahomes curse a little bit in the Super Bowl, right? You guys had a great lead. They hit the 3rd and 15 play, backpedaling, doing all the Patrick Mahomes stuff. He did it to Baltimore again last night. This has been some streak of football that this young man has been on. And as you, as an opponent of him, and you're watching him play that game last night, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, he's really dynamic. It's also a combination of things because he's incredibly talented, but it's not just him, you know, that makes the engine go. You know, it's Hardman, you know, it's Tyreek, you know, it's Sammy, it's all the weapons they have on offense, and then it's Andy and Bieniemy, you know, and how creatively they use all those. There's Travis Kelce, you know, there's so many different weapons, so many things you have to, like, it's not like pick your poison. It's just pick how you're going to die and how slowly you're going to die. You know, it's not like we're going to stop them and hold them to zero. You can do your best, but it's going to take a ton of mistakes from them to hold them to zero, you know, because you have to be alert of so many different things. They can send all their greatest players this way, and you're watching all of them. You're watching Tyreek, you're watching McCole, you're watching Sammy, you're watching Travis, and then they throw a screen to the fullback for a touchdown.
And then they throw one to the tackle.
Then they throw one to the tackle.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, it's like, okay, so we're watching all your weapons, and then you throw a touchdown to the tackle. Like, screw us at that point. And so it's the creativity of Andy and Bieniemy, and also the talent of Patrick, you know, that are allowing him to blossom in this way, because he's so uberly talented. But if you put him with a bunch of practice squad receivers, you know, I'm sure his talent would shine, but I'm not sure they're winning in this way. And if you put him with different coordinators, I'm not sure it goes this way. The same is true as if you put a different quarterback in Andy's system. There have been plenty of quarterbacks who played in Andy's system who haven't had Patrick's success. And, you know, so everything is kind of coming together, perfect storm. And that's why they work so hard to lock these guys up, because, you know, this is their time.
Now Clyde Edwards-Helaire joins the mix as well. It's amazing. It's really fun to watch him play. If you were to pick an MVP, like I was thinking about this today. I go, how can you possibly at this point separate these three guys, right? You've got Russell Wilson, who's been perfect. He's just perfect. He's been amazing. We did one of their games. Patrick Mahomes, been not perfect. I mean, but he was so spectacular in the game that was featured on national television. People will remember that one. Aaron Rodgers has been nearly perfect and is now mixing in to Matt LaFleur's offense in a way that they just didn't do it a year ago. They've mind melded or something now into this team. If you had Russell, Patrick, Aaron, who would you take out of that group right now?
It's hard to judge it off September football. You know, you don't win the MVP with September football. And that's why I don't even try to get in the discussion of picking it, because December football is when you win MVP. December football is when that award is won, because you can play fantastic in September and October and then if you play terrible down the stretch in December, you will not win MVP because you won't be a top seed and your team won't be discussed in that way. So there's not a five seed getting MVP or the quarterback's getting MVP. You know what I mean? There's a one seed. The best offense on the best team will have the MVP, and that's usually how it is. When Peyton wins it, when Lamar won it, they were the number one seed. You know what I mean? When Patrick won it, they're the number one seed. They're blasting through everybody. You know, that's how it goes.
But Matt LaFleur made a statement to us the other night before that game. He said, defenses have a huge disadvantage right now, that without the crowd in at least half their games helping their cause a little bit, stifling whatever the quarterback can say at the line of scrimmage. And the points have been outrageous to date. I mean, they're scoring points at a record pace. The Packers averaging 40 points a game now after three. Do you think defenses have a huge disadvantage right now?
I mean, they've always had a huge disadvantage since they've put the Mel Blount rules and all the rules in place. I mean, there have been third and 22s that have been converted with illegal contact, five-yard penalties, you know, that have led to touchdown drives that would have been stopped had it not, you know, on plays away from the ball. You know, they're throwing it to the right, there's illegal contact on the left, and it's leading to a first down. So I think defenses have always been at a disadvantage in that way. And I mean, it's almost down to the minutia of conversation, of communication. Like when you're on the field and you're communicating, they can hear your communication. So they can say, when you have a bunch formation and you're saying lock, 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 they can say, hey, they're locking this up. So each one of them have each one of us. So they're not passing it off. So when I pick this guy off, you'll be scot-free. They can hear you say it. And you can hear their checks. So there are offensive line checks that they're making where the defensive line hears their checks. So it goes even deeper than what you're saying. Like, you can hear the quarterback make an audible and hear it clearly. Hey, hey, check, check, check dragon, check dragon. All right, all I need to do is hear it twice. And then dragging a slant, slant flat. Okay, good to know. You know, so it changes the dynamic of a game. And so much when you're running a fire zone and you're calling zone it, and they're like, hey, he's blitzing here, they're zoning this off, throw the quick screen. I mean, it happened in our first game against Arizona. And so it definitely has changed the dynamic of the football, the gamesmanship within the game.
And we already saw a couple of times this week the rule was applied one way in one game, applied another way in another game. The one advantage they do give guys, if you can get that wide receiver out of bounds, right? If the quarterback's out of the pocket, he's done. That receiver's done. And Trayvon LeBlanc in the game, the Eagles game against the Bengals, did exactly that. Dropped coverage, ran to cover somebody else. They threw it in to his guy, but he already knew he's out of bounds. And so it was like a fantastically smart player who did a smart thing. But it doesn't always work, does it?
It does not. It does not. And it should always work. And that's where I think that the refs are almost coached up to look at defenses a certain way and not call the flags on the offense. They don't even look for them a lot of times. So in the Seattle-Dallas game, they gave Greg Olsen the catch after he had got pushed out of bounds because they gave the penalty to Jalen in about, I forget, it may have been third or fourth quarter of that ball game. And it allowed them to get to a score. You know, it was a penalty on Olsen for illegal touching, stepped out, come back in. So it would have been a loss of downs, would have been a penalty, bang, bang, bang. But instead they were at the 1 yard line and Russell Wilson was out of the pocket. So if he's out of the pocket, he can shove them all he wants. There's no illegal contact, but it's like the refs forgot. And so it's plays like that where it's like, hey, that was the difference between maybe 3 points and 7 points. So 4 point difference, you know, in a 7 point ball game.
If it happened to you, I'm guessing you might have reminded them of that rule.
Oh, I would have reminded them immediately. It's happened a few times where I shoved them out, and they were like, they were in a huddle, and he was like, was that holding? He was like, nope. Was that pass interference? He was like, no. He just shoved them out of bounds really hard. He's like, well, was the quarterback out of the pocket? He was like, I don't know. Like, yes, he was. I'll let you know. He was. So.
All right. I want a former teammate of yours, former friend of yours, Earl Thomas, right? He ended up moving around a little bit, a couple of times, then was out of work for a little while. Now he's apparently down in Houston, and we'll see what's going on. You and I both know that he's a little crazy sometimes, right? I mean, we love him. He's a great guy. Before the Super Bowl one time, he came in and he started in on me. I didn't even say hello yet. And he goes, oh, I'm reckless. I'm reckless. What are you going to talk to me? I'm reckless. And I go, what? And he's like, so now he's clearly mad. And I'm literally cannot figure out what he's talking about, but I know he's mad. So somebody looked it up online, and apparently I had said something during one of the games about, watch this guy play. He's just reckless. And I go, no, I shouldn't say reckless, but he's just like throws his body around and he makes these big hits and da 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 da. But as it always works, some aunt in Louisiana sent him a message that I said he was reckless. He had fed off of me calling him reckless for half a season over this thing. He's a raw, emotional guy. Give me the upside. Give me a little bit of the downside. Give me a story on Earl.
Oh, man, I could give you plenty, but that's a perfect one. But it that kind of defined him and defined a lot of us during that time. All you needed was a chip. You needed somebody to give you the fuel. And I tell you what, you go to a practice, any practice, I mean, during our time, you can pick one, show up any day. I don't care if it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, before the game, warm-ups, and he'd immediately stand out to you. He'd stand out as he's moving at a different tempo and intensity than everybody else. And so he always sets the tempo of practice because it could be an OTA. That's why we always got fined and got in trouble for OTAs. Because he didn't care. If you're going to line him up and make him put cleats on and make him line up on the field, he's going to play it like a game. And so that's him 100% of the time. And for some people, that rubs them the wrong way because they're like, hey, this is a walkthrough, and he don't care about that. If you're asking him to go out there and prepare and play, then he's going to play at this level. He's not going to bring it down because you say walkthrough tempo. He's not going to bring it down because you say it's OTAs. He's not going to bring it down because you say it's preseason. If you make him get out there, he's going to give it all he got, and he's going to be a destroyer, and he's going to wreck everything he sees. And so, you know, it's unfortunate what happened in Baltimore. I don't know the full scope of everything, but I could understand that you know, the way he maneuvers day in and day out. If you don't have an appreciation and a love and an admiration for who he is as a person and how he approaches the game, then, you know, it may not be your cup of tea. But for a team that like Houston, who needs a spark right now, I think he's going to come in and change the culture of that defense.
Yeah, I used to tell people that you have to be a little out of your mind on the football field to be successful, right? I mean, for me, I was 190 pounds, 6'4". People were literally trying to slice me in half. They were doing – they wanted to kill me anytime, and I understood it. You know, I fully understood it. But you had to find something. And that's the reason when people talk about newspaper clippings and, oh, get out of here, that doesn't make a difference. I'm like, no. In week 14, when you can barely walk and you really don't want to go to practice, if that coach can lay something in front of you that says, this guy thinks you suck, there's something about that as an athlete, as a competitor, that makes a difference, doesn't it?
Oh, 100%. If somebody says that it doesn't make a difference, they're lying to your face, because you need that spark. You know, you need that gasoline to throw on the fire when it's going down to an ember. Like, you're tired, you're irritated, you know, the monotony of the season has kind of gone. And no matter how great of a player you are, you get into that human nature kind of kicks in. And if you can find something, you know, whether it's, you know, you calling Earl reckless or somebody saying, hey, this team isn't expected to win this week, or, you know, it could be something just that simple, or they're expecting this receiver to have a great game against this defense, And it's like, oh, you think you're going to have a great game against me? Oh, you think I suck? And then you start to build this up in your head, and then all of a sudden you're ready to go.
It does. It builds into a monster that you believe. And it was funny when I finally figured out what it was with Earl. I was like, I get it. I've had a few of those during the season. I rode them like a horse all the way through the year. You know, you just ride those things. All right. I want to ask you about Cam Newton. Here's a guy, and we did the game in Seattle, and he was utterly fantastic. So they come out in opening week against Miami, and, you know, he barely throws the ball, and, you know, he runs, and I go, okay, I get it. I see what they're going to do. They're going to play defense. They're going to do that. Then they come out against Seattle, and he sits back in the pocket, and he is rocketing these balls all over the field. And I'm like, uh-oh. These guys have a chance. I mean, this is legit again. This is not, you know, Tom Brady left, this is rebuilding anymore. This is, we have a chance here kind of thing. Your impression of what you've seen with him going there, and did you ever think it was going to work with Belichick? Because when I asked Cam that question, he was like, dude, I got to tell you, I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure I could go be me in New England with what I knew about Belichick and those guys up there. So I went up there and I wore my hats and I wore my outfits and I was joking and I was being me. And not once did I ever feel remotely uncomfortable that I was doing anything wrong. And it was quite a statement, really, about the Patriots and what you think about what goes on there.
I think it's a testament to their flexibility and adaptability in New England. And from what I've heard, it's a really difficult environment to be unique in. You know, they kind of run it in a militant way. Everybody kind of falls in line. But I also knew that the way Belichick works, he's adaptable to his players. You know, there have been players that have had streaky paths that have gone through there and had success. So I don't think they pick players or you know, bring players in that they don't think would work, you know, in most cases. That's why they, you know, when they bring a guy in, you're like, they're about to have a revitalization of their career, because Belichick brings guys in, he puts them in positions to be successful, he uses their strengths, and bang. And I think that's what they're doing with Cam. I think people forget that Cam was the MVP of this league, you know? And I think sometimes they compare every season to his MVP season, which is a little unfair, you know, because if you're saying every season should be MVP, then even a good season is bad, you know. Even if he's having a good season, he's not having an MVP season, but he's having a good season. They're like, nope, he sucks. He's getting injured. He's getting beat up. He was a mobile quarterback. He ran the ball for a long time and took a beating. I think they underappreciated his true talents, you know, and who he was. I think he's lived up to every expectation that was presented for him as the number one pick in our class. And I think that New England has gotten him back. You know, they've tweaked a little bit of his mechanics and put him in his comfort zone.
Yeah.
And then still run plays that play to his strengths and make sure he's a running threat and he threatens the defense, which forces you to prepare for that and gives him easier looks in the pass game. And it's been symbiotic.
You know, he got in there, and from the beginning, he was in the building at 6 o'clock in the morning. He was, you know, the guy that was the last one out of there, and they knew it. The Patriots knew it. They did their homework. They knew the work ethic of the guy, but it's kind of interesting that story never emerged before he got there. It was like it took that seal of approval for somebody who only respects that kind of work before anybody realized why that guy was the MVP.
Right. It's like they never appreciated that side of him. They think he just shows up, you know, they get caught up in the flash and things he says, what he wears to press conferences, that side of it, and kind of ignore all the preparation and everything it takes to be a top level NFL quarterback. And so I think it's cool because people are getting another, you know, I was one of the first to comment on, like, man, they're getting him for a steal. I can't believe any MVP of this league would ever be signed for such a low deal, under $10 million. And, you know, I got a lot of scrutiny for that. People are like, oh, he got hurt. He's not as good as he used to be. And it's like, well, I'm guaranteeing this guy didn't forget how to play football in the last couple of years, you know. And New England saw that and, you know, hat tip to them.
You and I get a lot of scrutiny for everything that comes out of our mouths. So you may be more than me, which is really impressive. I've always been impressed with that. All right, final question. I'm going to give you one here. And I left alone the 49ers because I'm doing the game and I don't want you to do any top secret stuff. I won't take advantage of the relationship. But you guys were amazing last week to go up there with like a mass unit of a football team and blow them out, basically. That was impressive. So we'll see. Sunday night, we'll see if you can do it
again. I appreciate it. You know, if you want me to speak positively about, you know, Nick Mullins.
Say something about Nick Mullins. Go ahead.
Come on now. We got a chance.
Give him a little bit on Nick.
Nick Mullins has such a high ceiling, and I think sometimes you get caught up in this league and say, hey, this guy was drafted first round, so we hold him to this regard. This guy was undrafted, so we don't even give him consideration for being a top-level guy. I think Nick Mullins can be a great quarterback in this league. Obviously, Jimmy's our guy, and he's the guy who's going to get his snaps when he comes back and gets the claim. But I think Nick, when he gets his chance to be a starting quarterback in this league at some point, is going to surprise people. He threw for 400 against Seattle the first year I was out there, and he threw for 400 in a way that many people hadn't against Seattle in a really long time. And I think this game, he was prepared for his moment. We don't think of our guys as like, hey, man, it's a mashed together unit. We think of these are elite guys. People don't know it yet. You know, these are NFL players. These are, you know, Brandon Ayuk is going to be a heck of a player in this league. Ross Dwelly, obviously, you saw what Jet McKinnon is capable of. Jeff Wilson Jr., you know, had 2 touchdowns in a game. Fantastic. Our offensive line is fully intact. The defense played fantastic. Jason Verrett deserves a ton of credit. Fred Warner's an all-pro. So I think people underplay how much talent, you know, with Eric Armstead and the guys we have, they can still do it.
You play that chip about as well as I do. I had, when I was drafted in the second round, first round pick was a guy named David Verser. He showed up at training camp in a bright, shiny, red, new Mercedes convertible. I was still driving my Bobcat, which is a shade underneath a Pinto. And I refused to buy a car. I drove that sucker in there. I parked right next to that red Mercedes every single day. I walked past those 2 cars every single day. And I did not allow myself for a minute to forget who got picked first and who got picked second. And we were both receivers. And I'm like, all right, it's game on now, man. It's time to go right here.
Right. I got to show you every day, like, you guys made a mistake.
Yeah, then I'm going to steal your car. All right, last question. Here we go. Categories. The game of football is changing a little bit on offense. I mean, there's no way you can watch Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, go back to the days of Steve Young, Fran Tarkenton, whatever you want to say. The mobile quarterbacks that can throw it, but can also escape, buy time, force you to cover for 6 seconds instead of 2.5 seconds, right? Would you rather see that crowd? Or would you rather play against the Tom Brady's, Johnny Unitas's, Peyton Manning, Dan Marino, the guys who are going to sit in the pocket, but basically were great at distributing that ball 60 yards vertically, 53 and a third yards horizontally. They were the greatest at reading defenses, all that kind of stuff. When you get ready for a game, which type would you rather see?
I guess I'd rather see the pocket passer, because then it's more predicated on you understand the concepts that are attacking you, you know, being pinpointing your breaks and in your reads. There's so much less predictability with the mobile quarterbacks, because you could have everything covered. You could have read it right. You could understand the concepts and been in the perfect defense. And they extend the play and break down a defense in a way that it shouldn't have been broke down. Like you got everybody covered, but you didn't plaster. You know, the linebacker didn't, you know, who's in the hook area on the dig is in the perfect position if he throws the ball on time. But once the play breaks down, he doesn't turn around and run with the receiver. And even if he does, he's kind of outmatched athletically. So it's putting your defense in compromising positions. You're breaking down your D linemen and forcing them to run more than they, you know, so you're putting them at risk for strains and tweaking their ankles or whatever the case may be, especially with how dynamic a lot of these guys are. So I think in terms of dealing with them on a consistent, you know, a one-in, you know, one-out basis, you'd have to go with dealing with Tom and those guys.
All right. Well, we know now if you play against a scrambler, you're just going to shove the receiver out of bounds anyway, so we know your whole game plan.
Stop telling my secrets.
Sounds good, man. That was fun. As always, we'll do this every week, and we're going to cover a lot of topics. We've got a few hot ones. We'll do a social justice show coming up a little bit down the road, but we wanted to break you in gently, and thus we have, and it's been great, man. Looking forward to next week.
I can't wait for next week. Thank you again.